Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Remember, if you're not already a subscriber, you can sign up right now and take advantage of a 30-day free trial by going to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to enjoy the best football writing anywhere, just as football returns. Chris, you did a couple of great pieces recently, and George, I saw your piece with regards to the contract extensions and stuff like that. It would be great if we could point people in their direction.
Yeah, so George this morning, so this Tuesday we're recording the podcast, George did a piece on the sort of contract situation of those players whose contracts are going to expire at the end of the month. So he's got more details on basically how there's been an intimation from the club towards Carroll, Matty Longstaff and Javier Manquillo that not only do they want them to stay until the end of this season, but potentially beyond. And then sort of last week, added a more in-depth look at sort of the Matty Longstaff situation, exactly what his options are, Udinese, Watford links, all of that sort of stuff. And basically,
Udinese, is that how you pronounce Udinese? Is that right?
I have absolutely no idea.
Oh, but, come on, chaps, come on. We've got 69
Udinese.
Questions. We've got 69 questions from Newcastle fans to
George
get to.
Just
and 69, 69 is, of course,
just
is the sexiest.
69 over and over again.
It's the sexiest number of questions you could possibly have. I think I'm borrowing a joke from Charlotte the other week.
Yes.
But come on, let's go. These questions are all answered. So, I mean, these questions are all here to answer, so let's do it. Come on.
Okay, well, you know, come on. I was just trying to get some information out of Chris, but yes, fine, George, fine. Have it your way. Of course, yes, we have done a question and answer thing for this podcast. There's been lots of questions sent in from Twitter, and we're going to go through and try and rattle through as many as we possibly can. George, I'm getting to it. I can feel your frustration bubbling in the background.
I'm just like a coiled spring. I'm like a sexy coiled spring ready to...
You're more like a coiled duvet, George, let's be honest. Right. Let's start at the top.
So I will say there were...
No. You can't say anything.
70 questions.
No, there were
more than 100. There were more than 100. All right, go on then.
Right, starting at the top, and of course, a lot of these first bunch of questions are going to be revolving around the takeover. At Nikos underscore NUFC, a few weeks ago, your confidence seemed to change from if it happens to it will happen, and also pointing to an unofficial yes. Do you still feel like this now, or has anything changed? I'm presuming that's aimed at George.
Yes, and I'm going to... The next one was from Magpie Southern, who says, you seem confident still that the takeover from Piff Staveley and RB is going through, but we're interested to know what you think would happen if it fell through. So I'm going to put those two together. So, I mean, I've always been confident, and that confidence has come from the people that I speak to. Both sides want this to get done. The thing about unofficial yes, I put that in context last week. I'll do that again. What happened at that point was that there were a load of stories saying that they'd been given the green light, that the Premier League had been given the green light. Now, my understanding at that, well, my knowledge at that point was that the Premier League had not signed this off, as we've seen. Here we are 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, and they still haven't signed it off. So I was just being very careful with my choice of words. There have been various points along the way where it looks like either the green light is about to be given or that the nod has been given somewhere down the line that everything is going to be okay. My interpretation of it, that's all it is, it's a guess, it's putting two and two together, is that the main bulk of the work has been done on the test, but they're still working through they're still working through questions, and there were still being questions answered as of last week. Now, I think that's the final stage of the process, but oh my God, how many times have we said that? How much longer could those questions still go on for? I don't know the answer. What would happen if it fell through? Oh my God. Well, we've got some more questions about that further on, so let's do the next one.
We certainly have. And I think Nikos also followed up with, if you were forced to put a timescale on when we would be likely to get a decision, what would your guess be? We know nobody knows for sure, but it would be interesting to get your opinion. George, what would your opinion be on this?
Well, I'm going to apologise to Nikos and everybody else and say that I just don't want to do that again. You know, I think we've all thought at various moments that it's been very, very close, because that's kind of what we've been told. Everybody had been. There was certainly a sense of them being ready for that announcement to come, and you know that hasn't happened, and there have been more questions. So I just don't think it helps anybody, Nikos, if I do that, and it just it just serves to get people excited, irate, and we've already seen this, this kind of sort of vicious circle of it's imminent. Oh no, it's not. Yeah. There's more. You know. So let's just wait and see and let them do it.
Okay, Chris, what do you think about this? Did the buyers underestimate the level of opposition this takeover would generate, or did they factor in all of this noise and the length of time it has taken?
Underestimate.
From AXCrazy1 on Twitter.
AXCrazy1.
He must be a guitar guy, dude.
I don't want to necessarily say they're underestimated, because I know that they did foresee the potential issues which were going to arise, and I know a lot of work has gone into the background of that. George has spoken about this before, that they had certainly in terms of human rights and also the potential piracy issues. I think that the fact that this is has become such a huge story, and given that lockdown has coincided with it, and therefore scrutiny probably has come closer onto the deal, that's probably sort of accentuated everything. And actually, very interesting piece from Matt Slater on The Athletic, looking at the piracy issue they do, and he makes the point that really, because now more than ever the Premier League relies on its broadcast partners, and so probably when they were looking back into this in January, it wasn't quite as much of an issue, because we hadn't had coronavirus impact on revenue streams in terms of match day revenue and other elements, whereas now, being obviously are very, very important to the future health of the Premier League financially, so I think it has become a bigger issue in that sense. So that's sort of a fudged answer, but yeah, I don't think it was underestimated. I just think circumstances have changed. Yeah.
Just to add to that very, very quickly, they knew that human rights would come up as a conversation, and they knew very well that piracy would come up as a conversation. So they knew all that. Just to repeat what we've said all along, they were told it could take up to 30 days, and it's taken twice that. So has it been longer than they thought? Yes, it's been longer than everybody thought.
Excellent. At James Newton has asked, if the takeover is delayed and in the meantime NUFC are relegated, would there be a case for suing or legal action against the Premier League for their dither and delay? And he's put in brackets after that, ironically, a takeover post-relegation would be easier. Is that what the EPL are hoping for? Twizzle end of moustache?
Well, I mean, let's try and not do the conspiracy theories. I mean, no, the Premier League are, you know, working through this. As I say, it's taken far longer than we thought, but they're not delaying it for that reason. In terms of relegation and suing and stuff like that, I mean, God knows. And they've been trying to buy the club, or, you know, this bid has been at least 13 months in the making, and they would have put a bid in at any, you know, could have put a bid in at any time if they thought it would work, or if they thought they had all the finances in order. So, I mean, no, I mean, I think that's just the luck of the draw. You know, I think they're pretty confident that Newcastle won't get relegated, just like I'm sure, you know, we are. But, I mean, and the thing is, it just takes us into realms of speculation there.
So the next question comes from, it's kind of two questions in one, coming from Dolphin Hotel and Andrew McVitty. Assuming the takeover goes through by the end of this month and we are in the Premier League next season, what would be on your to-do list between now and whenever it starts with regards to signings, supporter relations, investment, managerial and coaching appointments, etc.? Chris, you did a piece on this recently. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, well, we've actually done a few bits on this recently, but one of which was sort of almost like 10 points which prospective new owners should look at it if they take over. And I think one of the key things is to really set out a vision for the future, and I know that a mission statement is being worked on, that's what we understand, and that improving the communication with supporters, saying that this is what we want to do with Newcastle United over the next few years, this is our vision, this is our aim, I think that's essential to begin with, particularly in the sort of lockdown situation, the coronavirus affected world that we're in. George and I have written a few pieces on how, with it being the lockdown takeover, essentially, that this is difficult. You know, you're not going to be able to come in and make necessarily all the sweeping changes you want to begin with. Infrastructure, we've written a piece on the training ground and how long term there will be an idea about changing that and improving the infrastructure, but really to begin with, that they can't physically do that anyway, and there aren't specific plans yet for that. So in the short term, it's about deciding, building those supporter relations, bringing those club legends back into the club in some capacity, be they Kevin Keegan, Alan Shearer, all these sort of disillusioned figures who are so important, and just build that rapport with supporters. There will be a honeymoon period whereby there'll be a lot of goodwill towards them, and make sure you build that and make Newcastle United again the central focus, the central institution of the city as much as you can in the short term. Signings will come as well. The managerial situation will have to be decided upon, but very first thing is to really build that relationship with supporters and just give the club direction again.
I think the first thing they should build is a giant statue of Kevin Keegan straddling the River Tyne on the quayside. That would do me about 1,000 foot high, made of gold. That would be the first thing to build.
Beautiful.
What were you going to say, George?
No. Chris got it absolutely spot on. Repair and rebuild. Make this a club it's possible to love again. Make us love this club again and rebuild it. Rebuild, so that's the team, but it's the academy, it's the training ground, it's all that thing. It's repair and rebuild. Show ambition. Show ambition.
Absolutely.
Show love. Show ambition.
Showing love. I'm going to group these next three questions together because they're all on the same point. Equinox Pigeon, Sean Pierce, and Toon Mad Mag, some great names in here. Equinox Pigeon, I've got their first two albums. They went downhill after that. Does the deal hinge on the piracy issue? Is the only way forward for Bean to be reinstated?
Issue,
George.
Issue.
To be reinstated in Saudi Arabia. Is this likely to take months? That's Equinox Pigeon, Sean Pierce and Mad Mag, all asking questions with regards to the WTO report, Bean and the Premier League and the piracy. Now, Matt Slater wrote a piece about this. I believe it was yesterday it came out, and he also spoke on the Ornstein and Chapman podcast. Have a little listen to that.
The stumbling block is the piracy issue. And this goes back to the Saudi-Qatar bust up 3 years ago. People might be aware of beIN Sports. They're a massive broadcaster. They have all manner of sports rights. They spend huge money on sports rights, huge money in this country, but huge money elsewhere as well. And they are the big player in North Africa and the Middle East and a few other markets as well. But, you know, they're a really big company, very, very close partner of Premier League. For about the last 3 years, they've been pirated by a Saudi-based operation called Beout Q, you know, a play on beIN Sports. And, you know, all right, in a nutshell, it does appear various reports, technical reports, various governments now agree with this, that there is some state involvement, some Saudi state involvement, to say the least, in Beout Q. And it was a attempt to damage Qatar economically. That's played out for the last few years. It's been largely ignored, but obviously has become incredibly important in the last few months, because now a different branch of the Saudi state is trying to buy a Premier League football club. And this poses a huge dilemma for the Premier League for a few reasons. One, the Premier League's entire success over the last three decades has been based on its close partnerships with broadcasters. It's deemed to do really well on piracy. If you have a problem, the Premier League will have your back. And that means shutting down pubs that are, you know, closing the windows and got a dodgy box and doing lock-ins to, you know, backing you in court. The Premier League opened an office in Singapore. That was very much about putting boots on the ground to defend their broadcast partners. They have a really good relationship in this space. Lots of rights holders have been furious with Saudi and Beout Q for years. The Premier League has led the charge. This is a massive dilemma at a time when the Premier League needs its broadcast partners more than ever. You know, matchday income, tickets and what have you, look seriously compromised for at least a year to 18 months. The Premier League earns 70-odd% of its money from broadcast anyway. That proportion's going to go up. It's 84, 85% for some of the clubs anyway. This is not the time to look weak on piracy. This is not the time to upset one of your broadcast partners. And yet here we are again, round a table, Premier League a few months ago, being really angry with Saudi Arabia. Now, face-to-face with them, as Saudi Arabia tries to buy a club. And look, there's lots of reasons why in a different, you know, if things were different, they'd be like, brilliant. Another wealthy person's going to come in and breathe some life into one of our clubs. You know, Big Six, great. We'll have a Big Seven. We'll have a Big Eight. Fantastic. We'll have the most exciting competition in the world. Even better, maybe Saudi Arabia might want to bid for our rights in a few years' time when they become available in that region again. Fantastic. Every club would like that. But this is a massive dilemma. To say yes without getting any concessions out of the Saudis in terms of really tackling piracy on the ground in their country and letting beIN Sports operate again in their country would just send a bad signal to the industry.
There we go.
Yeah, I think Yeah, well, I know that those were the questions that were being asked and answered last week. It was about piracy. So that is what they're looking at the moment. And so saying, does it, is that what it hangs on? I think it probably does. And if as we think, that the bulk of the work has already been done, I think it's finding a way of making the deal watertight. It's making it kind of legally proof. Because you don't, I mean, so for all that there's been this sort of war in the media about, you know, two different Middle Eastern countries that we don't sort of know very much about, beIN Sports have been a big partner of the Premier League over the years and have spent a lot of money on television rights. And that does have to be protected. I mean, I can absolutely understand and see that. So I think that's what it's, I think that's what they're talking about. In terms of the time it's taking, it's just that takes us back to the original, you know, question we answered earlier. It'll take as long as it takes. We all hope for our own sanity and for the good of the football club and the team, by the way, as we'll come on to. I think it's important we get a resolution.
Graham Harrison and at 47AEH, which I think is the name of Elon Musk's kid, isn't it? is that right? I don't know. I can't tell. These are both questions about a potential other bidder for the club. What can you tell us about the alleged backup takeover from Henry Maurice? Have I got this, the pronunciation of that right? Is it realistic? And is it an attractive backup? What do we think about that, Chris?
Is it realistic? Well, reports seem to suggest that it is. I haven't got any specific information to confirm or deny that. And the bid that is currently there, which is there's legally binding contracts with between Mike Ashley and the prospective buyers, is with the Amanda Staveley led bid at the moment. I'm sure there are other people waiting in the wings. There's always been interest in Newcastle United over the last few years, even if it hasn't got to this stage until now, whereby it does look imminent in terms of quote unquote regarding just relating to the fact that we're now waiting on the Premier League. Henry Maurice has been linked a lot recently. There's another report the other day from Luke Edwards in the Telegraph, who we know is a very well connected journalist. He says so. I know Henry Winter at the Times has suggested there's another American based party interested. I haven't got any specific information to back up or deny that. I don't know if George has anything more on that, but the focus is very much on the Amanda Staveley.
There's a deal that has been accepted and agreed and is there waiting for sign off. I mean, I'm very suspicious about other people coming forward now, 13 years into this, and it's very difficult to say this because this has been such a public, you know, bid and has been from the start with Amanda Staveley. But the usual rule of thumb is, you know, names don't come out until something's happened, and you know, I know that's a cliche, but it's true. And so I'm very suspicious, I think naturally suspicious and cynical about why a name would come out now once a bid has actually been accepted and agreed and signed off from both sides. So, you know, I personally, I think it's irrelevant unless this deal were to fall down. And I'm afraid, in which case, we would have to go back to the very start of the whole process. Which is not,
and we don't need that. I just find it quite sort of interesting and a little bit frustrating that suddenly people come out the woodwork after 13 years of Newcastle United being on and off the market for sale and stuff like that, and then suddenly we've hit this point where we're at the very edge of this being done and sorted out, and then suddenly there's another name or another two names or another three names.
Exactly.
It absolutely bends my mind. Okay, so Nick Osanyu FC, oh, we've had one from him already. He's getting in there.
Yes, there's a few.
Monopolising the questions. Could they change the percentages now so that PIF have a low enough share so they are not subject to checks? Get the deal done and then try and increase their share later on. At least this way the deal will get done and we can worry about how much they own later. Is that something that could be potential? Or I would imagine now that things have been signed and kind of agreed on, that that sort of thing couldn't change.
Yeah, and then that leads us to a question from Dean Buckle and Edit Kev, who sort of say, is there a plan B if they don't get agreement for PIF involvement, such as increased stakes for PCP and the Rubens? And Kev says, could they restructure their bid? The problem is that this bid... is, you know, it's there, it's written down, it's all legal. Any changes to that would mean that, as far as I understand, that the original bid will then be null and void. They'd lose their deposit and they would have to start again. And it's taken months and months and months to get to the point where they can submit the bid in this format. And if it's subject to change, then again, my reading would be, unless there's an agreement with Ashley that it's okay to do this, that they have to effectively start all over again. And, yeah. You know, the idea that PIF could lower their percentage involvement and then come back later on, well, then later on they'd be subject to those the same tests, because effectively it would be a change of ownership. And so, again, that doesn't work. And who knows whether the Rubin brothers would want to take that much ownership in a club. They've done it this way. They were involved last time Staveley tried to buy the club. And again, it was in a limited, with limited involvement. So, and I'll say this again, it's taken 13 months to get to this point. You know, to the point where we are now, it's not something that can be done in a matter of hours or days and weeks. It's taken painstaking negotiations. I mean, I'm sure I've talked about this before, but if not, I'll say it now. There was a time this time last year before Rafa left the club that Amanda Staveley thought there was a chance she could get the club then, and it didn't happen. Mm. And it was only towards the back end of last year that the Saudis became involved. It's taken months and months and months of painstaking negotiations on all of their side, let alone with Ashley's side, to get to this point. So, I mean, it sounds very easy. Yes, okay, other people can increase their stake. It's not easy. It's not easy. So for the moment, it's this or starting all over again.
It's not something that can be just sorted out over a Zoom call, is it? You know what I mean? It goes through lawyers and Christ knows how many levels of legality before it gets anywhere near. Also, George, I must say, lovely to hear you say the word PIF quite a lot as well. I've never heard you refer to PIF as PIF before, but I really love it. I think we should keep that. That's delightful.
What am I saying wrong now?
Nothing. You just said PIF. Issues. And I love it.
PIF. What's wrong with saying PIF?
I don't know. I've just never heard it before. And it's
should
really
I be
cute.
Saying PIF?
Well, I think everyone else has kind of said PIF, but I know PIF is quicker and I like
so you,
PIF.
So do you
listen,
prefer
George.
Words, do you prefer words to be spelled out? In which case, you are a TWAT.
Nah, all right. Don't take the PIF. Nah. SW Geordie has got three questions in a row here, so I'm going to just ask them all and then we can get through them as quick as we can. Will we get an announcement from the Premier League if the test has been passed or failed?
We don't know.
We don't know. There you go. Why are the prospective new owners being consulted about decisions if they have yet to pass the Premier League test? Can they have any influence?
Well, it's limbo. There's cooperation. Yeah, it's important to say there's been real cooperation, you know, between both sides, and with issues concerning the running of the club. They have been consulted. This is what's coming up. This is what we might have to do, because we're approaching a point where contracts are up, loans are up, and the football is coming back. And so also at the moment, we're in this period of quote unquote handover. Now, we all thought that handover would be done by now, and it hasn't been, but there has been, so there's been cooperation. And if not, if although the prospective new owners are not taking those decisions because they can't, because it's not theirs, they are at least being made aware of what's happening behind the scenes. That's important. That's good.
And SW Geordie's also asked, do you feel this level of scrutiny would have been applied by the Premier League to the takeover deal if it was one of the big six being taken over?
Everybody
twizzles mustache again.
Everybody thinks the world is against them. That's, you know, we're all paranoid.
So is that a northern? Edit Kev has asked, if the NUFC bid is rejected by the Premier League, do you think the football associations in France, Spain or Italy would welcome PIF as owners? Which association would represent the biggest threat to the Premier League by having an investment of this size?
I saw this question. I don't really understand the sort of premise of it, more just in terms of will the Premier League worry that they've lost sort of potential Saudi investment to elsewhere? Mm. I suppose they would, but I don't think they're going to suddenly think if there's Saudi investment, that's suddenly going to really affect the competitiveness of the Premier League and the saleability of the Premier League. You already have Qatari owners in France for PSG, for example, and you have Chinese owners in Serie A and elsewhere. So I think that they want... I think ideally, as Matt Slater again goes into this, in his long pieces, ideally the Premier League would like this sort of level of investment and to attract as much investment as possible from wealthy owners. But the issue that they have is that they've got this conflict at the moment with piracy. The issue, yes, issue. As George would say, with piracy. So they have to try and sort of square that circle at the minute. So I don't think it's the fact that they don't want investment. I just think it's the that this is something which really goes to the core of where the Premier League's main revenue streams come from, and they have to protect both sides in that sense.
Which part of quickfire don't you understand, Chris?
I mean, if we go through the length of answers we've had so far in this, I imagine yours are going to be 10 times longer than
right,
me.
Right, well, come on, let's come on.
Come on now, let's not fight.
Let's get quicker.
Here we go. Is it time for the Oxford English Dictionary to redefine the word imminent and what it means?
That's Mark 74, NUFC. Oh, my goodness, Mark. Yes, it is. Also, red flags, that's lost all meaning. Limbo, that's lost all meaning. Yeah. Next week, that's lost all meaning. This week, that's lost all meaning. I mean, imminent compared to 13 years. Okay, fair enough. Let's just take that.
Shorty 301267, Manchester. It's a great name. 1990 MSH and M. Chicky Chater have all asked questions about the time limits on the Premier League owners and directors test. Is there a cut-off point for the takeover? Is there legally a time limit of how long these tests can take? The club's just left in limbo currently. The Premier League have said they have no timescale for this, but surely they understand the state of the club and its current owner and realise a faster resolution is needed for the sake of the club itself. Is there a time limit on this, George, or is it just going to, as we've said millions of times before, it takes as long as it takes?
Yeah, no, the guidance, I'll say it again, the guidance was up to 30 days, you know, but that was only guidance. It's taken twice that. So no, there's no deadline. I don't think there's any deadline to the deal itself. So we just have to, you know, it's just once it gets through this test, I agree. It's limbo. Sorry to use that word. You know, and it's horrible for us. It's also, you know, it's bad for the buying side. It's bad for the selling side. And it's bad for the team. It's bad for the team and the coaching staff because it's hanging over everybody. But, you know, the Premier League would answer, we just have to get this decision right. We have to take as long as it takes to get this decision right and make sure it's the correct decision. And if that takes more time, then, you know, it's not the Premier League's fault that someone decided to sell Newcastle and that someone else tried to buy it. So we just have to let it happen.
Jimicini has asked, George, how close have you been to deleting Twitter during this takeover?
I haven't, but it's...
You've had a little break, haven't you?
I had to change my settings for a little while. I did get a bit overwhelming, and I think we all have to look after ourselves like that, and I would recommend that people doing that every now and again. If you have a day off, you know, turn your notifications off and look at the sunshine and go for a walk and do all those other things. We use Twitter at The Athletic for our work and to market our pieces, and so it's very important that we're here and we engage. I love having a chat. I love having a conversation. I'll tell you a very brief story. I was running the other day and I ran past Majestic Wine down Matthew Bank, and there was a lad who pushing a pram with headphones on, and as I ran past him, I was listening to music. He pointed at me and then pointed to his ears, and it's like, oh, I'm listening to you. I'm just listening to you right now. And I turned and waved and stuck my thumb up, and it was just great. I felt really proud and lucky and privileged to do what I do. That's not directly related to Twitter, except of course we've plugged you know, the pod and questions today on Twitter as well. So no, it's part of life. I love it, but you have to be careful.
As nice as anecdote as that was, George, it wasn't exactly quickfire. Just say that.
Right.
Let's move on quickly. On a scale of 1 to 10, how depressed will you be if this takeover falls through?
I don't want to use the term depressed because I don't want to go into sort of clinical sort of terms, but in terms of would I be disappointed? Yes, and primarily for all of the Newcastle fans out there who are just desperate for a change of ownership. So I think there would be immense disappointment, but we'd just have to hope that if that was to happen, as I say, we haven't got any information that is going to happen, but if it was, then hopefully there would be one of these supposed other buyers coming along quickly to resolve it.
I don't think I would be depressed if the takeover falls through. I think I would be disappointed. Like Chris says, I would be slightly gutted. Not depressed, not at all. So zero as far as depressed is going, but confused, maybe.
I was born miserable. I was born a 10. So, I mean, I would be. In footballing terms, yes, definitely. It would be horrible. It would be horrific. It doesn't even bear thinking about, if we're being honest. But no, in terms of life as a whole, you know, there's other stuff going on at the moment. There's really important, big, bad, you know, difficult stuff going on. And so, again, I mean, I know our football club means a huge amount to us, but, you know, we have to try and put things in perspective and, you know, look up and look at the sunshine and look at the green leaves and, you know, and try and feel happy about other things as well.
Very true.
Don't know why I said green leaves there. I was trying to be quick fire.
Okay, let's move on from the takeover. I think we've covered loads there with regards to the takeover. We'll talk a little bit about the football side of things. The first two questions I'm going to group together because they also are covered by a piece that you wrote, George, very recently. What's your take on the contract situation for Matty Longstaff? Do you see him signing a new deal before the end of the month? That's from A Sloth Party. And which of the OOC players
out of contract.
Out of contract. Ook. I thought it was just ook. Elliot Carroll, Darlow, Mankio, Sterry, and Jack Colbach. Do you see NUFC trying to keep on?
Yes, yeah, so I did write a bit about this. Chris has also done stuff on this, so we'll try and do a bit together. I mean, obviously, it's bad that Newcastle have allowed this situation with Matty to get to this point. He's been free to talk to foreign clubs for a while now, since the turn of the year, and we know that he's got this. We know he's got this offer from Udinese, which is worth around £30,000 a week, which is a lot more than the £850 a week he's paid at the moment. Newcastle have now responded with an offer, which we're told, I was told, was around £20,000 a week plus £10,000 every time he plays. That strikes me as being a very fair offer for a lad who's started 6 games in the Premier League or whatever it is. You know, the question, I suppose, is whether it's got too far to be resolved. Hopefully not. The new owners would want him to stay and they would want to keep him, and this is something that both sides have talked about. It becomes very, very complicated, so this is not a quick fire answer, Waffles, I apologise, because we're now getting to the point where out of contract players are out of contract to the end of this month, and football is only coming back soon. So the club are presented with a dilemma, and the dilemma is that, yes, they need bodies and they need people to stay, they need backup. And I think the concern from Steve Bruce is that for people, whether it's Matty, whether it's Andy Carroll, whether it's Mankio in particular, what is the incentive for them to sign short-term deals, potentially putting themselves at risk if they get injured and then they have no contract to fall back on? And so the club have made contact with those three players now. Lee Charnley spoke to their agents, representatives last week and talked about the idea of them staying beyond this season. Perhaps that's not an ideal situation. Longstaff is clearly the priority. But what happens if none of those three players play again, and then suddenly Newcastle get a raft of injuries in a position where they're not quite safe and they're still in the FA Cup? So it's a short-term sticking plaster. It probably wouldn't be necessary if there were new owners in place, but there's all sorts of things at play there. Elliot won't be offered a new deal, and I don't know about... Are Darlow and Sterry also out of contract, Chris? Is that right?
Darlow actually has an extra year, which I know it's widely been reported he didn't, but he has another year. Sterry is out of contract, so is Jack Colbach. They will both almost certainly leave at the end of this month. Yeah. They've not been involved in training, and I don't think they're going to be involved beyond in terms of the games coming up. I think Newcastle are going to instead look to some of the under-23s. Again, that's complicated because Premier League regulations are that they have to be under the age of 21. Now, my understanding is that Newcastle have even looked at trying to get someone like Dan Barlesa possibly involved if he wasn't to continue at Rotherham if the League One season is to end. But that would need special Premier League dispensation or relaxation of squad rules, because at the minute he's over the age of 21 and so has to be registered in the 25-man squad, which he currently isn't. That's the issue they got with Paul Dummett as well. He is currently outside of the 25-man squad because he was injured in January. So as things stand, Paul Dummett can't play for the remainder of the season, and Newcastle have to wait and see if those rules are relaxed.
Andy Carroll's an interesting one as well, isn't it? Because he was only a short-term deal to start with. He was only a year's contract. What's going to happen with him?
Well, so they want him to stay this season. It's really important that they have backup. Steve Bruce has already admitted that Jillinton isn't a striker, so really they only have Dwight Gale. And, you know, they need Carroll as backup, particularly if they have injuries. And the concern, perhaps Andy Carroll won't have a huge number of options for him next season, but if you don't offer the incentive of another contract or at least talk about it, then I think the concern is... You know, the concern is that Newcastle leave themselves very short. And so, if everything goes okay, then perhaps that means there's a chance that Andy Carroll, or, you know, even if the takeover were to fail through, Steve Bruce would then have to pick up the pieces. If you're losing three kind of first team squad players or first team players who are out of contract, they have to be replaced, and that costs money. And if the takeover doesn't happen, will there be money? And so you have all these things that are going around that, now, I don't think the takeover is going to break down, but, you know, people have to make decisions or start planning, or, and that's why this limbo is very damaging to sort of everybody, because it doesn't help. I mean, if new owners were to come in tomorrow, do I think Andy Carroll would be there next season? No, I don't. But at the moment, we just don't know anything, do we?
I'm going to jump to a couple of questions about St James's Park. There's a couple of things about maintenance and also redevelopment here, which we want to get through. Do you believe the stadium facilities need better maintenance and where necessary upgrading? Stadium needs regular maintenance. Sir Bobby Robson was so proud of it, but the way it has been kept recently would make him angry. I have to say I agree with this. From a fan's point of view, I think the stadium, you can slap black paint on walls as much as you like, but the inside of that stadium needs a damn good overhaul. And I don't think it would cost an awful lot of money to do it either. I don't know how you lads feel about that.
Yeah, I do think it needs... Yeah, I think it needs love and general upkeep. I suppose the one issue that I always have answering questions like this is that we're in a sort of privileged position of going into the press box. I don't see large parts of where fans go around St James's Park. I see pictures on social media. I hear responses from fans, and I see a lot of that, but I can't say that from a first-person point of view. One thing I will say, which is a problem that a lot of Premier League clubs have, they don't even have one screen, whereas at Newcastle do have the one screen, but obviously if you're in the east stand or if you're on the far side of the Gallagher end, you can't actually see the screen at St James's Park, which for things such as VAR and other bits which are coming into football now, I know fans aren't going to be in the short term, but that needs resolving as well, because if we do need greater communication for fans, if there's going to be a decision which has been reviewed and things like that they can't see on the screen, then there needs to be a screen thought up somewhere else or some other solution thought up just in that regard. I know that's not so much maintenance, but that's just the sort of ideas of what needs to be sorted from St James's Park, from what I can say from a first person point of view.
And then Lee Errington has talked about capacity, you know, owners looking at redevelopment capacity. Yeah, it's definitely something they've looked at and they're thinking about. I mean, clearly it's not going to be the first thing that they want to do, but they have asked questions of that. And I believe they've asked questions of, you know, of politicians and things like that around the city. I hope they wouldn't consider a new stadium. I love St James's Park and I love its iconic positioning in the city. That would be a kind of deal breaker for me. But yes, it's something they're looking at.
Do you think, this is from Chief Morgan, do you think playing the rest of the season behind closed doors will benefit or hinder Newcastle?
This is a difficult one to answer because I don't know yet how, because you have to factor in that there's also 19 other teams who are going to be facing something they haven't faced before in terms of behind closed doors game. I think it will hinder Newcastle in the home quarter final against Man City. I certainly think it'll hinder them in that regard, because the fans would have been so important that day. It would have been a huge historic occasion. So I think in that sense, in other games, I'm not so sure, because they've got a few away matches against the likes of Villa and Brighton, whose home form has been better than when they have had supporters there. But Newcastle are going to go to those grounds, and there isn't going to be that sort of home support to really get behind Brighton. And also, almost a contrast between Sam Maximan and Joe Linton here, because Joe Linton has struggled to a large degree since he's come to Newcastle number 9 shirt. Will he be liberated somewhat without the scrutiny of fans within the stadium? And for someone like Sam Maximan, even though people are watching on telly, he's someone who really absorbs the energy of the crowd, and when they get behind him, he's very tricky and things like that. So I don't know whether he's going to lose a little something with that. I hope not. I hope that him not being in front of a crowd won't make a difference, but there's just so many intangibles. Sorry, this is a question. I'm just basically fudging the answer. I don't know, basically.
What are Newcastle known for? Not winning anything, and a shitload of people turning up. And so, of course, I'm worried what might happen when a shitload of people don't turn up.
Although they are also known for crap away form, which may, if neutral venues, then, not neutral, essentially a neutral, because if there's nobody there, then maybe that helps them. We're just,
shut up. Move on to the next one. It's awful. Come on, move on.
I'm going to jump ahead a couple here in our little list, lads, because there's a few down the bottom that I want to get to before we wrap up. Who, in your opinion, is NUFC's most underrated player ever? And that's from Graham Bell _NUFC on Twitter.
And the answer is, Taylor?
James Perch.
Okay, next.
No, it's not. My actual serious answer to this is Rob Lee. So,
He's not underrated. Have we not already done a podcast on this?
Yes, we did a podcast on this. We did.
No. For all of you, what is your favourite Newcastle home strip and why?
Oh, it's the Kevin Keegan title non-winning year, black and white stripes, absolutely beautiful, Adidas, and then also that away strip, the horizontal burgundy and what kind of blue stripe. I love that. I love that away.
The 95 to 97 kit.
That's my favourite.
I think that's the same for everyone, isn't it? Is that the same for you, Chris?
Yeah, although I'd also give an honorary mention to the one a few years later with the sort of blue trim. I like that one as well, the blue trim and the still with the Newcastle Brown heel on. I like that kit as well. But yeah, I think
Gazza's silver away strip. I like that.
That's a great kit. That is a lovely kit. That Newcastle home shirt with the brown ale badge on the front won the Amazon Twitter poll about the greatest ever football shirt last week.
No, it was gorgeous.
It was voted on by hundreds of thousands of people, and that one won the full thing. So there we go. With regards to refunds, is it because the club is in limbo effectively between ownership and under a sale agreement that the money can't be refunded until that is resolved? Doesn't negate the lack of communication on the matter, but is this likely? That's from, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce that.
Well, I don't know the specific answer to this question. I would be guessing to a certain degree, but what I do agree with is that communication should be better, even if that is the case, which I don't know whether it is, if the fact that because a potential change of ownership is coming through and they don't want to make such big decisions about an economic issue that big, then I think they should come out and just say that this is we recognise the need for refunds and this is something which we will communicate in due course. The fact that they haven't confirmed that staff have been furloughed or that this is actually still a problem with the refunds, I think is in itself just plain wrong. Even if you get
it's
into
scandalous.
The issue, there haven't been refunds. The fact that there hasn't been any communication at all.
I don't care what the context is. There is absolutely no excuse for the lack of communication. It is scandalous. It is scandalous. We're talking about people's money. We're talking about people's money in a time when people are really struggling. And you know, to blame a prospective takeover for failing to even acknowledge that there's a situation or that people have grievances or people have problems is just horrible. The club have traditionally been absolutely abysmal at talking to their own fans in human, warm, normal language over the last 12, 13 years. But it's just scandalous that they're not saying anything now and not saying anything about this. It's disgusting.
It absolutely is. Yeah, completely agree with that. At Evan Milburn has asked, what is the best goal from this season so far?
I can't even remember who scored it, but my favourite kind of moment is the equaliser at Goodison Park when I was in the away end. And
Lejeune.
Good yeah, balls. And I mean, it was just brilliant. And I wrote a piece that night. Chris was in the press box. I was in the away end, and it was just, you know, it was just absolutely crazy, limbs everywhere. And that was, you know, probably one of my favourite pieces I've written this season, and it was definitely my favourite moment. It was just glorious, absolutely glorious. Not best goal because of aesthetic beauty, but just because of just that nonsense, getting lost in the nonsense of the moment.
Excellent. I would say the St Maximin goal against Oxford in the FA Cup. That was probably goal that I thought was the best goal this season so far. What about you, Chris?
I think probably from an emotional point of view would be Matty Longstaff's against Man United in the first one, obviously. I know probably wasn't, again, the best strike, but I think just the context of it, that would be up there. And then also John Joe Shelvey against Manchester City, even though I think that Kevin De Bruyne's goal in the same game controversially was a better goal. The Shelvey one was still very good and obviously was an important moment as well.
We're running out of time, so I'm going to try and blast through a few of these questions quickly. We've got some nonsense here. What's the best plot twist in a film you've ever seen?
Blimey. One film that I've rewatched quite recently is Seven with Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman.
That's a great film.
That was a pretty good ending.
Probably a bit cliched, but Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, obviously the famous line from Darth Vader to Luke.
I watched the last Star Wars just the other week, and in fact about a week ago, and I did enjoy it. All the Star Wars films are exactly the same, aren't they? That is
the same film.
Yeah, it is the same film done nine times.
That's it. I'm going to mention The Sixth Sense as being a decent plot twist when you find out, you know, thing that you find out in it. Questions for General Waffle. Oh, my God. Batman's Milkman has upgraded your status to General Waffle. If you were a pirate, God's sake.
Christ almighty.
That's a good start,
monster,
isn't it?
What monster have we created here?
Haven't we got enough issues with piracy already?
Yeah, we probably have. Yeah.
If you were a pirate, which which would you prefer if you had a hook for a hand, a peg leg, or a loss of eye resulting in an eye patch? No mention of a parrot on the shoulder there, which I'm disappointed with.
Or would you prefer just to stream football matches illegally?
A BO'd cue box for a leg.
Come on, Waffles. I think I'd go for a peg leg because I'm useless at football anyway, so it wouldn't be that great a miss if I couldn't actually run around doing
Interesting.
It.
Interesting. Interesting.
Mm, I think eye patch for me. I think it's cooler. If, like some Bundesliga teams, the Premier League allowed cardboard cutouts instead of a proper crowd, who or what would you have as your cutout? I would say David Hasselhoff for me, probably.
What about you, George? I'm just going to say Chewbacca because I haven't moved on in my own head from Star Wars.
I think I'd just have it like zoomed in on my early lockdown haircut.
Which moves us on to the next question. Which of the North East Press Corps has the finest lockdown haircut?
Well, I've seen a few of my colleagues and they suddenly have these kind of incredible bouffant haircut. But no, Chris has to get the award for this for attacking his own head with a pair of shears.
Yeah. You look like you'd lost an argument with a lawnmower, Chris. That's what you look like. JLC182 asks, what are your cat's names? My cat's called Freddy.
Friedrich, Zygmunt, Bobby and Eva.
Nice. Chris?
I don't have a cat, or my dad does. Oh, well, called Simba.
Balls to you, then, Chris.
The longest cat I ever had, not longest in terms of length, but in terms of time, just I don't know why I said that, but just a
big, long cat.
So I had a cat for about 19 years. I loved her, and she lasted through several relationships and jobs and all that, and I named her Fanny. And I kind of thought that would be, A, quite funny, but also it's kind of quite a nice name, you know, Victorian. But basically, because it was quite funny, and I was very childish. I didn't think it through, however, when late at night I needed to attract the cat back into the house so it wouldn't be locked out, and realised I'd have to stand on my back stair shouting, Fanny.
And I mean, you still do that now, don't you, even though the cat's gone?
It doesn't work, let me tell you that much.
Cracking podcast, lads, from Geordie Gadgey. Thank you very much. What Cheers. Are your top five pubs in Newcastle for pre-post beers? And what yeasty beverage, oh God, or fruit-based drink is yours of choice? What's your best pubs, George?
Cumberland, I'd say. Free Trade.
No, pubs, not sausage.
hang on. Cumberland, Free Trade. Where else do I really like? Crown Posada. Yes. The Bridge Tavern, I really like. Mm-hmm. And, oh, God. I should probably say the Gosforth Hotel, just because it's local to me.
Oh, there you go. Chris?
Yeah, I'd echo some of George's. I'd add in the Trent, certainly.
And oh, my God, I should have said the Trent.
And the Too Hotspur late. As well. I like the Hotspur. And Newcastle. And Newcastle Arms.
Excellent. I'm going to go for Sergeant Pepper's, Sinners. Players Sports Bar, 2-for-1 on Jaeger Bombs, and any Wetherspoons? No, of course not. Pop World. Yeah, the Trent for me is a great bar. I love the Strawberry just for where it is and what it is.
Oh, Strawberry.
The Bodega as well.
Oh, God, there's so many good pubs.
I like Tilly's. And I like the Newcastle Tap now because I can get some weird and wonderful beers that you can't get anywhere else. Pubs. So there you go.
Head of Steam. Head of Steam,
yeah. Oh, I miss the pub. We're coming towards the end now. I've got a couple of questions about meat, which are going to fly through. are pork and apple sausages a main course or a pudding?
I think Chris needs to take the bulk of these.
Go on, Chris. Chris, you take the bulk of the meat.
It's not my favourite type of sausage, but I think it is a legitimate main course.
Sausage. Sausage. Do you have issues with sausage?
I mean, I think I would personally just want a good sausage, a good pork sausage, and I would happily like have apple chutney or like apple sauce next to it. I mean, I think apple is wasted within a sausage, personally.
I make a delicious sausage casserole with apple cider vinegar included in the sauce. Mm. Did Private Waffles provide the sausage for George's Big Five? Or we didn't mention George's birthday, George. What did you get? Did you go to McDonald's?
I was going to say, I didn't get any sausage, but Chris actually did a social distancing present drop-off, which included quite a substantial quantity of meat in it.
Wow.
Just to, there was some nuja, Is that, am I pronouncing that right, Chris?
Andouille.
Andouille, which is incredibly hot, like a meat paste, which I stuffed a pepper with some mozzarella and roasted it. And it was incredibly hot, incredibly spicy. Very nice. And he's provided me with some speck and some other meat. So, yes, he did. He provided the only sausage that I got on my birthday, so to speak.
Brilliant. Ted246, garlic or chili on a kebab? Let's go around. Chris?
Chili.
George?
I'm saying chili, yeah.
I go both because I'm a heathen. Put the lot on. David Pick, 1987. I sang that. I don't know why. If Chris was furloughed from The Athletic, would he be allowed to moonlight on the meat counter at Morrison's until he came back to work?
I think it'd be a good choice to do so. If I was Morrison's, I would consider hiring him because he does have a deep knowledge and interest. I mean, talking that out loud, I wonder whether he would be so tempted to sort of pilfer bits of meat and sort of just munch on them whilst he was
hide them about his person.
Maybe he'd be a terrible employee, yeah, and just eat it. I think he might eat it. So no, I don't think he would. I don't think that would be a good move.
Chris, somebody's asked, have you ever broke the 5-second rule with regards to sausage, which is the rule of if you drop a piece of food and it's allowed to be on the floor for 5 seconds.
Ask the follow-up question as well, please.
Oh, has he ever played hide the sausage? It's terrible.
In terms of the answer to the first one, yes, I think I did. When I was in at a Christmas market in Hamburg, I'd bought a Frankfurter, and I think I dropped it. And I hadn't realised I dropped it because I was drinking my beer, and then it must have been at least 5 seconds later that I did pick it up and eat it, yes. So, unashamedly, yes, I did.
You dirty birdie.
Dirty dog. I think the 5-second rule is adjustable depending on how delicious the piece of food is. I think if it's a bit of broccoli you drop, then, you know, 2 seconds is enough. Whereas if you drop a lovely bit of fillet steak with a Dijon sauce down there, it could probably be down there for about a week and I'd still go down for it. What would you rather have? Can only have one, from Leafy Dragon. A lifetime supply of free Dixon's or Greggs and the Newcastle takeover accepted.
Well, I'm going to say Newcastle takeover because
yeah, me too.
I can continue to buy Dixon's and Greggs, and I'm quite happy to contribute to my local meat-based community.
Likewise, yeah, and also if I had a free supply, then my cholesterol levels would really be at a
I'm already levels. Worried about your cholesterol levels and your state of your arteries.
And finally, thank God, Tom and UFC, if the takeover was a sausage... Oh, Jesus Christ. If the takeover was a sausage, what kind of sausage would it be?
I've got the answer to that. It would just be a really fucking long one. Can I just say thank you so much to everybody who's submitted a question? I think there were over 100. I had to just stop because I ran out of time when I was going through them. But and we didn't get to all of them even on this list. We tried our best, but quickfire. I think our quickfire... Quickfire work needs work. What? Our definition of quickfire needs work. Correct.